You know my next guest. His early career as a con man and swindler was made into a major motion picture directed by Steven Spielberg and his character played by Leonardo DiCaprio. Can you guess the movie's name? Well, the answer, of course, is Catch Me If You Can, and the con man was Frank Abagnale. Now, Frank joins me today to discuss his new book, not Catch Me If You Can, but Scam Me If You Can, Simple Strategies to Outsmart Today's Ripoff Artists. And I'm so pleased to welcome him to our program. Hey, Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be on.
You know, it's important to state up front that you turned your early years of crime into a legitimate career, lecturing around the country, training FBI agents, assisting the FBI when they called on you, and you were a trusted FBI person for more than four decades. What have you been doing of late?
Basically the same thing, you know, that I did before the movie. For the last 43 years, I've taught at the FBI Academy, taught two generations of FBI agents. I, of course, have conducted more than 3,000 seminars around the world for corporations, financial institutions. And in the last 5 years, I've spent some time with AARP, helping them deal with crimes against seniors. They, of course, have 38 million members, and they're concerned about things like scams and identity theft. And so that's how the book came to be, from the relationship with AARP.
Yeah, that's actually how I found out about the book, receiving literature from AARP and seeing your name and seeing what you were doing. And then we reached out to you. Now, when you were first washing checks or whatever you called it, I mean, that was a different world back then. And I mean, and you were really above the average in the sense you pretended to be a pilot, you pretended to be a medical doctor, all of those wonderful things in the movie. But your main con was writing bad checks. Now, the world has changed just a little in those 43 years. It's a lot more complicated now, isn't it?
It is, but it has made crime 4,000 times easier than when I did it 50 years ago, because I didn't have all of the technology that exists today and the ability to do it from thousands of miles away. But certainly I've had to change over my 43-year career of learning all these new crimes. I mean, when I went to the FBI Academy, there was no cyber crimes, no identity theft, no phishing emails. None of those things existed. And crime is changing constantly, so you have to constantly keep up with crime, and I've had to do that my entire career. But the one thing that I've realized is that the criminal hasn't changed. The methods, the personality of the criminal is the same. It's just that the technology the criminal has that they use today has changed completely.
Well, you know, in the book, you talk about the techniques that con artists use, and one of them is the art of putting your victim under the ether. What is that?
It's absolutely just the ability to get into someone's, to believe in what you're saying and that you are who you say you are. And the truth is that the majority of people are honest, and thank God they are. But because they're honest, they don't really have a deceptive mind. So when the phone rings and the caller ID says that it's the police department, they truly believe it is the police department,
because no
one's told them differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the person says they've arrested their grandson for DWI and they tell you what kind of car he was driving, he had a passenger in the car and what her name was, but he asked us not to call his parents, he asked us to call you, and he has to post bail in the next couple of hours or have to spend the weekend in jail. Of course, the grandparent immediately, well, how do I do that? Well, you can give me a credit card over the phone and we'll post the bail.
Mm-hmm.
And if unless someone's walked you through that and explained the grandparent scam to you, you would truly believe it's legitimate. And because they go to social media where the grandson has showed his car on a picture of it, has his girlfriend's name and a picture with her, has his family's name. So the things they're telling you have so much credibility because we live in a way too much information world where we tell everybody everything about us and then wonder why they can answer all the security questions and they can make it sound so real.
It's also very insidious because the way they speak to you once they have a couple of phone calls, not in this particular case where they're calling you and it's a matter of urgency and you have to act now, but a lot of people get these phone calls where at first they don't trust, but they know just enough about the person where they can kind of become their friend and then very subtly get them to divulge, you know, how much they pay up for their mortgage, you know, what bank they use. It's more subtle than that, isn't it?
Yeah, and what's real scary, I think, about it is, you know, 50 years ago, there were con men and con women, and of course, that stood for confidence man. And basically, that was an individual who had to deal with you one-on-one, and he had to be in front of you. So he dressed well, he had a great vocabulary, he looked and spoke very well, and he was very friendly and likable. And he, of course, being a human being, dealing with another human being, there was some emotion involved and some conscience involved. So, you know, he may have said, I'm not going to take this person for all their money because he's a nice old guy. I don't want his house and steal all his money. I'm just going to steal some of his money.
Yeah.
The difference today, that individual is sitting in a kitchen in their pajamas with a laptop and a cup of coffee in Moscow, in India, in China, in Jamaica. They never see you. You never see them. There's no emotion. There's no conscience. There's no compassion. They will steal from you every single penny you have. And that's the big difference between now and 50 years ago.
Years ago, I would read books on sales techniques, and they talked about certain types of techniques which create more sales. And you in your book call them hitting the buttons, using scarcity or urgency or flattery as a way for these people to get to you. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I used to tell people all the time that if you show me a great salesman or you show me a great marketing individual or a great public relations individual, they basically have the same personality as the con man, the same talents, the same abilities. The only difference between the two is one stays on the right side of the law and the other one crosses over that line between what's legal and illegal. But the personalities are the same. They know to use the flattery. They know to use the urgency. They know how to get under your skin and get you to buy what they want to sell you or convince you that they're telling the truth. It's the same thing. It's just one using it in the right way, one using it in the wrong way.
Let's talk about those people who are calling us day in and day out from numbers that are not 800 numbers. They're not private phone numbers. They're actually numbers from people that we think we might know. It may say Frank Abagnale on there or Steve Pomerantz as the caller. And, you know, we're talking about robocalls. What is the current state of the robocall issue?
Well, and robocalls, you know, when we look at companies like AT&T and Verizon and companies like that, they're about 30% of where the robocalls come from. The majority of the robocalls are generated through these private phone companies that are all over the world in places like Jamaica, where they're very small businesses and they make a lot of money off of these robocalls, and they're able to use these calls for every possible thing that you can think about. And of course, the spoofing of numbers is very serious because, for example, if it comes up on the caller ID and it says the number for Social Security, and then I get you on the phone and maybe you're a little bit reluctant and I say, look, Mrs. Jones, if you don't think I'm from Social Security, you see the number on your phone that I called in on.
Yeah.
Go to the phone book and look up under federal government Social Security, and you'll see I'm calling you from the same 800 number.
Right.
And that's very convincing. And I can make it be your daughter's phone number, your number, the person next door's number. So again, unless someone knows this, it's very easy to convince people that it's real. And that's why in my entire career, I believe that education is the most powerful tool to fighting crime. If you educate people and you say, here's the scam, here's how it works, and here's how they forge checks, and here's how you tell whether they're altered or they're counterfeited, if you explain to people and they see it, they're smart enough to protect themselves. But they need the tools, they need to understand how that's happening. And that's why I was commissioned to write this book by AARP. I didn't receive any advance or royalties from the book. It's their book.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to make sure that I covered every type of scam involving millennials, involving seniors, involving investment people, so that people understood these scams happen to everybody.
Let's talk about the things that you can do when you receive, or that you should do when you receive a robocall. I'll start it off. First of all, don't answer the phone. That's in your book. Don't answer the phone. Don't pick up the call. Why is that?
Well, because a lot of people have a message receiver or phone that they get messages on, and they can hear the, I would just not answer the phone, then I can hear the message, and if it says this is U.S. Treasury or the IRS or somebody, you know it's a scam call, you just don't have to respond to it at all. But what I have found in doing the research for this book and spending the time writing it is that basically when you look at all these scams, no matter what they are, robocalls or otherwise, they come down to two red flags. And if you understand these red flags, you will probably not get scammed. And the first red flag is that I'm going to tell you that you have to give me money immediately. You have to pay this right now. So either give me a credit card number over the phone, go and tell me where your bank account number is so I can draft on it, or go down to Walmart, get a Green Dot card, call me right back and give me the number on the back of the card. If I had said in the grandparent scam to the police officer, well, you know what, I live just a block from the police station, so why don't I just walk down there right now and give you the $500 bail?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
It has to be right now. And the second flag is that simply at some point, whether it's a romance scam or I'm saying I'm your bank, I'm going to ask you for personal information. What's your social security number? What's your date of birth? You know, where do you bank? What's your credit card number? Those are the red flags.
Some of these calls take a recording of your picking up the phone and someone saying to you, are you Steve Pomerantz? And you go, yes. They take that yes and they apply it in all nefarious ways. What do they do with that?
Well, yes, and that's happened to my own wife. I mean, that happens to lots of people. And basically, then they turn around and send you a bill for something that you never ordered. And you call the place and you say, look, I never ordered this. Oh, no, actually, we have a recording of you saying, yes, you want it. And then they play this recording and it's your voice saying yes. And then they, you know, if you say, well, look, I'm not doing that, they'll try to threaten you with, I'm going to turn this over to a collection agency, I'm going to let the credit bureau know, I'll turn this over to our attorneys. Those threats you just need to ignore. There's nothing they're going to do, there's nothing they can do, but that's a scare feature of the second part of that scam.
So you should, if someone says, this is your name, you should go, correct.
You could.
I don't know what they're going to do with the word correct.
No.
Well, you know, the other interesting thing was that most of the calls come on Tuesdays and Fridays. Any logic to that?
Most of these calls come out of boiler rooms, and these boiler rooms consist of a lot of people, and they basically, there are certain times of the week that they get better rates on those calls. There's certain times that they think people are more apt to be, the people, whoever their target is, would be more apt to answer the telephone.
Oh, I gotcha.
So it's just based around those kind of things.
My guest is Frank Abagnale. The book is Scam Me If You Can. You may remember the movie Catch Me If You Can. He was the man on which this movie was based. The book is Scam Me If You Can, Simple Strategies to Outsmart Today's Ripoff Artists. Frank, I want to talk about passwords because they're driving me crazy. And, you know, I try to change my passwords and I'm constantly typing them in wrong because they're too long and they contain symbols and numbers. And according to your book, none of that really matters very much. What's the current thinking on the use of passwords? And is there a way to get rid of using passwords?
You know, I wrote many years ago that passwords were for tree houses. Passwords are a 1964 technology. They were developed in 1964. I was 16 years old. I'm 71 now, and we are still using passwords. We know for a fact that approximately 80 to 90% of all the malware, ransomware, is caused by passwords. So absolutely, I've been saying for years that we need to get rid of passwords. It's a very old technology, and happy to say today that there are a couple of different companies now that have come out with the ability to eliminate the use of a password. They identify you by your phone. So there's an ad out that you saw Serena Williams running through a marketplace. She saw a necklace she liked, but she was in a running outfit. But she only had her phone in her hand, so she walked over to the ATM machine. She pressed an app on her phone, and she got her cash, no card, no password. Those types of technologies today are what's taking over the need for passwords and eliminating that need. So I think in the next 2 or 3 years, you will see the major banks and certainly the major retailers and airlines eliminate the need for passwords. But it's funny you say that, because the other day I forgot a password. So when I went online and said I forgot my password, they came back and said, well, tell us the last password you used. I mean, it's kind of just very frustrating. But I think we're going to eliminate the need for passwords very shortly in the near future.
I know in the Apple system and the iOS system, it saves the passwords in a keychain. It's incredibly convenient to have that kind of a service. Does that protect me at all?
My concern about those things is, who is the service? Is the service seven guys in a loft in Denver, Colorado, or is it a multi-million-dollar technology company that's keeping those passwords? And then how do I know what that company is doing to keep them from being breached? Just a few days ago, we had a company that keeps 20 million fingerprints and biometrics for companies in Australia, the United Kingdom, and America. These are the companies that, when you enter your office building and you show your ID, those companies keep all of that data. Mm-hmm. And now that 20 million pieces of data in somebody else's hands, so they have access and entry points now and biometrics of 20 million people. So it's only as safe as how good the company is of keeping it safe.
Yeah, how many breaches do you hear about in a given year? I mean, it's constantly these large companies, even the credit companies, the Equifaxes of the world, even they're being breached. If they're being breached, what chance do we have?
I've dealt with many of these breaches, and as I tell agents all the time, that every breach occurs because somebody in that company did something they weren't supposed to do, or somebody in that company failed to do something they were supposed to do. Hackers don't cause breaches. People do. Hackers just look for open doors. And in the case of Equifax, they didn't update their system. They didn't fix their security patches sent to them by Microsoft. So the hacker simply was able to easily get into that open door, sit there for a couple of months and decide what information I want to steal, and stole it. And no matter what breach you look at, that's always the case. So in the case of Capital One, that was Amazon. Someone working at Amazon was able to go up in the cloud, bring down that data, and sell that data. So it always comes down to that individual, that human element of it.
I want to find out more about one of the topics in your book called The Wild World of Dating App Scams. Now, this never occurred to me that this would be an area for people to operate. How do those work?
Yeah, and there are lots of names like catfishing and so on, but so far the romance scams have basically doubled in the last couple of years since I've been writing the book, and they become very common. So one of the ways they do it is they will go to a Facebook page and they will capture the photograph of a young Marine who's very good looking, he's in full uniform, has his medals on his chest, and they then take that photo and they send out thousands of emails to women saying that this is me. And then they get a relationship with them on the phone or through emails. And eventually, after a month or 2 months, they might say, I'm over in Afghanistan, and I wondered if you could send me a gift card with $200 on it because I don't have access to money. Sometimes they're just somebody you meet online. In one case, it was a woman who was involved in a sweepstakes scam from a Jamaican group, and then the guy turned it into a romance scam and took her for a lot more money. Mm. And again, I say to someone, look, if you meet someone online and you have a relationship, you're talking back and forth, they keep you company, you like it because you're alone and you have someone now to talk to and communicate with, that's fine. But at some point, that person starts to ask you for money. That's when you have to say to yourself, I don't know this person. I never met this person. I'm not going to send this person money. But that's when you have to wake up. And I remind people today that you can't rely on the police, you can't rely on the bank, you can't rely on the government to protect you. You have to be a smarter consumer. You have to be a wiser business person today than you did 25 years ago. So you have to educate yourself about these things, otherwise you will be victimized.
Well, I'm terribly disappointed that all the Russian women that know me by my first name and want to meet me are not real. Is that what you're telling me, Frank?
They really want your money. They don't want you.
Okay. All right. Finally, let's talk about charity scammers, and we'll wrap it up with that. These are scammers that pull on your heartstrings. Again, we were talking about, you know, some of these hitting these buttons, the urgency, the flattery. Give us one quick story there.
Especially like the GoFundMe, and we had the couple that joined in with the guy that was homeless, and it was all a scam, and they got $400,000 from people who felt sorry for them, and that was all a scam. Mm-hmm. And we're getting ready to have election time, and there'll be all these scams about donate money to my campaign, which is not really the person that you're donating the money to.
Right.
What I tell people I find is the simplest way to deal with that, if you're approached by a charity you're not familiar with, is to contact your state attorney general's office, because your state attorney general is the best source, because they're elected by you, and he or she has an enormous staff that deals with consumer crimes, and they're very educated, they're very good. I've worked with all 50 of them. Basically, they're able to tell you this is a legitimate charity, it's not a legitimate charity. They will look into it if they don't know about it, and they will get back to you about it. But before you part with your money, make sure that you know that you're giving it to a legitimate source for a legitimate reason, and there's ways to verify and check that out.
My guest, Frank Abagnale, the book is Scam Me If You Can, Simple Strategies to Outsmart Today's Ripoff Artists. Frank, how do people get this book?
It's available on Amazon or, of course, in any of the bookstores. It's published by Random House, and it's my fifth book, but it's all the books previous to that have been about commercial crime, so it's the first time I really looked at consumer crimes, and I tried to do it so that it just basically educates people and comes back as a reference book if they ever need to look something up to see how that scam is working in case they're in the middle of being scammed.
It's a good read. Again, the name of the book is Scam Me If You Can, Simple Strategies to Outsmart Today's Ripoff Artists. And to hear this in any interview, again, just go to our website, which is stevepomerantz.com. We love your questions. We love the back and forth that it provides us to hear what you think of the show and to answer any questions that you may have. While you're there, also sign up for our weekly update for upcoming live events and the important topics we've covered this week straight into your inbox. That's stevepomerantz.com. Frank, thanks again.
Thank you, Steve.